Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Fast Money starts right now. I'm Melissa Lee. Tonight's trader lineup, Guy Dami, Tim Seymour, Dan Nathan, and Steve Grasso. Coming up on Fast, break out your rally caps. JP Morgan's Marko Kolanovich says stocks are headed back to all-time highs by the end of this year. The three reasons why he is feeling so bullish. Also ahead, FedEx delivers. The stock surging in the after hours and strong results. The company's call is just kicking off. We're listening in. We'll bring you all the big headlines. And later, Dan is taking the mound to pitch his next best idea, why he says this stock is ready to fly. That's a hint. We've got the name straight ahead. But we start off with a big rally on Wall Street. Stocks surging to end the quarter. And boy, what a quarter it's been. In fact, the S&P 500 posting its best quarterly performance since Q4 1998. So let us fire up the old Fast Money time machine for a trip back in time. In Q4 of 1998, the S&P 500 gained more than 20%. Today, the index finished the quarter up at 19.95% to be exact. In December of 1998, the unemployment rate stood at 4.4%. Today, we are at 13.3%. And back in the day, U.S. GDP growth was 6.6%. Currently, GDP has contracted 5%. Oh, and why are we playing this song? We might have a few Britney Spears fans on this panel, but the real reason is Hit Me Baby was One More Time was one of the top songs of the Billboard list back in 1998. And everyone is rushing to the box office to score tickets to see The Big Lebowski, one of the biggest movies back then in 98. But we all know what happened next. The party ended with a dot-com bubble burst. And by the way, the Dow just had its best quarter since 1987. So after a strong Q2, Guy, what happens now?
Can I start the game with a would
There's
you rather
no
to you, Mel?
There is no game.
Why not?
Go ahead.
Yeah, you have.
Would you rather go see Britney Spears in concert, assuming we can go see concerts, or go to AMC and watch the rerun of The Big Lebowski? I know where I stand on this one. I'm pretty sure I know where you stand as well.
The dude. I'd go with the dude.
Nice. You're such a lot. You know something? Somebody's in your ear right now telling you that because you never saw The Big Lebowski. You have no idea what that is.
All right, I've read about it. Anyway, go on.
Well, listen, good for the market. Unbelievable quarter end, you know, half year end, the whole thing goes out on a high note. It's fantastic. And listen, you can't attribute it to much more, in my opinion, than this Fed backstop that everybody's pretty convinced we have, because quite frankly, the news on the other side of things, on the COVID front, doesn't seem to get any better. I mean, we'll talk about FedEx. That was actually a great quarter, good for them. But on the margins, you know, this is market just gets more expensive by the day. So I understand what's going on here. I see why we're going higher. We defended that 3,000 level. We talked about the reversal yesterday. Those are all really good things. But it continues to be a buyer beware for me.
Yeah, Steve?
So if you compare it to 98, then you have to compare it to 08. Would you agree with me on that?
Sure. We took 98 because it's the best performance since 98. But, you know, you make your own comparison. Do whatever
right.
you want.
So if you compare it to 98, you're saying this was the best quarter since that. But the first quarter was the worst quarter since 08. So I'm trying to figure out where we're going after this. So it's sort of pick your poison, Guy. Right? That's a game, too. So I would say, to me, this looks a lot like 08 and the rebound. This was a forced, a forced fault, if you will. We're much closer to a vaccine than when we first started. So I would have to assume that the markets are going to reflect that. If the markets reflect that, PMIs get better, the world gets better, eventually we recover, and the market acts in kind, it's not going to be a quick spike higher, but I don't think we're going to see a collapse like we did after the 98, if you make that comparison, because I know what the next step would be, where we fell after 98.
Yeah. Dan?
Hey, lost my signal.
Well,
please tell them before they call. Yeah, I just think that what we have going on right now, you know, I don't really care about 98 or 2008. What's really important is what does unemployment look like in the back half of this year and in 2021? And I just kind of say that structurally, some very big things changed in our economy in just the last 4 months. And so when you think about what's been happening to small businesses, despite all of the fiscal stimulus and all the assistance they've gotten on the monetary side, it's just really going to change things for the next, you know, probably year to 18 months or so. A lot of the efficiencies that have been realized by a lot of companies, big employers and small employers alike, are going to keep unemployment very high. So I go back to 2009, where unemployment topped out at about 10%. After the, you know, the worst financial crisis we'd had since the Great Depression at that point, you could say that obviously this is the deepest recession that we've had since the Great Depression also. But I just think fundamentally things have changed a great deal. I think the jobs report this Thursday is going to be really important to see if that unemployment rate ticks back up there. And, you know, listen, the market ripped on the number last at the end of May when the number was surprisingly lower. So to me, I think it really relies on unemployment here. I don't think we have any clear vision into what that looks like, but I suspect it stays very high for at least the next year or so.
Let's say it stays high, double-digit percent, Tim, for the next year or so, but it doesn't get worse. Is that all the market needs, though, to keep climbing or to at least remain stable?
I think so. And you know, when you talk about 1998, the most important thing is, to me, that that was the year that after the Asian financial crisis and then the Russian financial crisis, long-term capital blew up, and you had really, to me, the first orchestrated bailout by the Federal Reserve. And since then, it's been a story of Fed bailouts, and it's really gotten absurd, and we talk about it all the time. But that's exactly the analog to today. So that's why 1998 is important. We had that quarter because the market was down 25% over the summer, and then essentially you got every bailout that markets, it was a new concept, I should say, back then, and it's with us today. The most important thing for the markets right now is this flood of liquidity, and the expectation of more stimulus is enough, whether it gets done or not. So I think the data points of which Dan's pointing out, we've got some enormous data out even in the next couple of days, not just here and around the world, but with the Fed and liquidity where they are and no sign of ever removing emergency funding, despite what he said yesterday, I think markets have to go higher.
So it's a bubble. I mean, with the Fed pumping all the liquidity in the system, Guy, it's a bubble.
Yeah.
But the question is, what will pop that bubble if the Fed is always going to be there?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I could answer that, because you know, then they'd write books about me in the years to come. They might do that anyway. I don't know. I mean, there's so many things that have happened over the last 6 months that I thought could have been that, and nothing seems to matter. I still think that, you know, the U.S.-China relationship is potentially a bit of a powder keg. I mean, we don't even talk about the election coming up in 4.5 months. I mean, that obviously, if that goes one way or the other, it could be market moving. So there's so many things out there that could move it. But I think right now, the market seems to think the Fed has their back, and they've been correct to think that. I'll say this, you know, Jerome Powell said something about when the time is right, they'll put the tools back in the toolbox. No, they won't. I won't say a lot of things, but no, they won't, because they tried to put the tools back in the toolbox in October of 2018, and you saw what happened there. The market called their bluff, and they brought the tools right back out. So they're at a point now where they can jawbone all they want about being able to put the tools back. They can't. They're in this now, and they're in it for the long term. I'll say, I think we're going to get to a point where diminishing marginal returns in terms of what the Federal Reserve can do for us.
The tools don't fit in the box anymore. I mean, let's be clear about that, right? I mean, they, again, as you said, they tried, they failed, and the tools just got bigger and stronger and did more heavy lifting. And now, Dan, here we are. I don't know how you take that back.
Well, listen, I mean, I think what's really clear here, and some very smart people that I talked to on the MMT, whatever you want to call it, I mean, really what it comes down to is there's a scarcity of risk assets, right? You saw that Sotheby's contemporary art sale last night. Things went record after record last night. People are dying to put their cash into hard assets. And so when you think about, as far as liquid assets are concerned, it's really the stock market. Look at the 10-year Treasury yield pinned at 65 basis points. You know, Guy and I have been talking about this a lot. I think if you see it break that March 9th low, 50 basis points was the close, 31 on the intraday. I think that there's a lot of things that won't like that price action. You just said we're in it for the long haul. The analogy would be Japan, who's been in it for the long haul, and look what happened to their banking sector. It's like down 80% in the last, you know, two or three decades. And I'll just tell you this, JP Morgan today at $94, underperforming the broad market, I think it's telling you that the back half of this year is not going to be nearly as rosy as the second quarter. And I also think that about rates. So, you know, to me, keep piling into the MAGA and all this high growth, you know, the winners of the pandemic, and that's fine. People are making a lot of money doing that. So I'm not arguing against that. I'm just saying that there's some pretty funky stuff going on here. And I think I'd rather look at JP Morgan than Zoom to kind of get a sense of where this market's going the back half of this year.
Okay, so first half, wild first half in the books officially. We thought it'd be a great time to map out the rest of 2020 with the chart master, who's got three ideas for you as we head into this back half. Cornerstone Macro's Carter Worth is here to lay them out. Hi, Carter.
Well, you guys definitely covered a lot. It's definitely a bubble, and there is an expression, the fix is in. The Federal Reserve believes, and for now, they have fixed it. We shall see. Nobody is bigger than the market. But anyway, we're looking at three sort of excellent things, if you will, not because I say they're excellent, but their charts are excellent, that they're good for the back half. A conventional buy, a bearish to bullish buy, and a stay long, be long buy. Let's look at the first chart. So this is biotech, IBB, and it goes back to 09. You can see the great run up from essentially 25 to 150. And then this tight range in which biotech has been mired for the better part of 3 years. And we're just now breaking out above the tops of that range, a conventional buy juncture, meaning it's a convention generally agreed upon what a breakout is. And that's exactly what's going on here. So one area that I think is quite good for the second half. Second chart, this is a bearish to bullish reversal buy. It's silver, SLV. You see the great run up, of course. It peaked in 2011 at almost 50. And then collapsed, and we've been carving out a bottom ever since, a rounding bottom, a bear to bull, however you want to call it. But this is also what I would characterize as something that's going to be quite good in the second half. Silver at $18 and thereabouts today, and I think much higher. And then finally, the third chart, what I would characterize as the royalty of healthcare. This is Thermo Fisher and Danaher plotted together on a five-year chart, and which you would call a stay long, be long kind of buy juncture, meaning you want to be present. If you're not present, get present. And if you are present, stay and enjoy. One, look how steady they are. And then just to keep this in mind, you see the appreciation there over a five-year period, 170%. Do you know what the Qs have done in 5 years? 130. And what the S&P has done is 49, meaning these stocks are better than the QQQ. One could say, well, but wait a minute, then they're overdone. But here's the best part. Guess what their beta is? TMO has a beta of 0.84 and Danaher of 0.87, meaning they have lower beta than the market, and yet they're outperforming not only the market, but the QQQ, which is the center of the adoration in the market.
Carter, always great to speak with you. Carter Braxton Worth of Cornerstone Macro. All right, so IBB, SLV, or the royalty of healthcare, TMO and DHR was thrown in there too. Grasso, which one would you go for?
IBB. IBB, you get Amgen, you get Vertex, you get Gilead, you get Biogen, you get all of those bets. If you go with Thermo, it's up 11%. It's up the same performance as IBB. I'd rather be more versatile, mute my risk. And as I said before, the vaccine is around the corner. It's a matter of 6, 8, 12 months. All of these will benefit from that. It would be IBB for me.
I mean, muted risk. TMO has got 0.8 beta, Tim. That sounds kind of good.
Yeah, well, I agree with Steve, but I don't agree with Steve. I actually like the IBB, too, because I think these are companies that have actually quite attractive valuations relative to the market. They have fantastic balance sheets. And maybe more importantly, back to Carter, if Carter was charting breakouts, this is a five-year breakout on the IBB, and I think he's done that recently for us. So I'd rather go with that day's Carter. And I think you have a dynamic here where, if anything, I don't necessarily agree that a vaccine is going to be be a catalyst to the sector or even one specific stock, because we don't really know what the costs are going to be, and we don't know the benefits are going to be. But again, in that myriad of choices, I definitely think IBB is breaking out, and you stay there.
All right, let's do some stock picking here. We'll take a look at some of the big winners and losers in Q2, find out if you should bet on these names headed into this second half. And so this paves the way for one of our favorite games.
Trade it or fade it.
Trade it or fade it. All right. what? Let's start off with PayPal, up 82% this quarter. We'll kick it off with Tim. Trade it or fade it.
Okay. You know, I reluctantly trade it. And I'm reluctant because the stock's up 40% above its pre-pandemic highs. The valuation is very difficult. At this point, if you want to reach out to 2022, it's 32 times. But, you know, they added 7.4 million new users in April. And there's no question that contactless payments is not going away tomorrow. And I think some of these tailwinds that are pandemic-based and were also around before the pandemic stay with them.
Yeah, so, Tim, I'm going to fade this one here. I mean, listen, you know, I think all of us have been on this train. We all thought that this is, you know, a secular shift that you cannot avoid. I think it's really important to note, though, when you talk about contactless payments, you know, Venmo is not that kind of device that you're using to buy things. You know, it's not like a B2C sort of thing. It's a peer-to-peer thing. Now, obviously, that's seeing great adoption here, but this is just a stock that, you know, broke out above 125, and now we're looking at 175. This is in a matter of months. So I think at 10 times sales, up 110% from those lows, I'm saying, you know what, you're going to have a better opportunity to buy this. I think you can continue to kind of wade into this. There's lots of different ways to kind of play contactless payments. Yep. I'm not sure Venmo is exactly it right here.
All right. Next up, Freeport-McMoRan, FCX, up 71% since the start of the quarter. Guy, trade it or fade it?
Trade it. I'm going to play the game correctly. I'm upset that they didn't fire the trade it or fade it.
That's your favorite part,
graphic,
right?
Graphic or whatever. That's my absolute. I could just listen to that on a loop. I often do, by the way, after the show's over, but I digress. Trade it. Good for Tim Seymour. Been on the back of this for a while. I think commodities are absolutely going higher. I think copper is one of those that will go higher. I think Freeport-McMoRan is probably cheap based on that. So playing the game correctly, I would say trade it, Mel.
You do a fine job of doing the audio, Guy, by the way. Next up, Lennar.
Appreciate
also
that,
up big this quarter. Dan, you trade it or fade it?
You know, listen, I think that everything's in place. I think you trade the home builders right here. I was looking to fade them kind of earlier in this pandemic period, but they are cheap. Rates are staying low. There are certain shifts that are going on, certain, you know, shifts away from urbanization that really benefit these guys. So to me, given the valuation, given liquidity, given rates, and given some of the shifts that are likely to be around, you probably can get long home builders even here, even after these massive runs off their March lows.
Yeah, see, you know, I'm going to have to play this game correctly, and I'm going to have to fade these. I think home builders' best days are really just bounce off of the expectations of the market really falling apart underneath the consumer. The consumer is potentially in a better place, at least with stimulus and the Federal Reserve, but very low rates aren't necessarily going to be enough for housing. And we've seen that for the last 5 years. So nice run on home builders, but I'm not chasing Lennar here.
All right. Now to turn to a Q2 loser. We'll hit GE, finishing the quarter in the red, down 14%. So, Steve, would you trade it or fade it?
I would trade this one. If you have to think about when the economy recovers, it's not if, it's when. So when the economy recovers, what's going to do better? Aviation and power. PMIs are better right now, but what's the most important thing about GE is the entry point that you can get right now. You're under $7. You have the ability to have a double in this stock, or at least a 30% gain rather quickly once the economy recovers. I would be a trader of GE.
All right. So, Guy, would you
trade it or fade it?
Oh.
You said it was your
you
favorite.
Beat me to the punch.
There you are. Go ahead.
It is my favorite. Now, you know, I think the point Steve's making at this price point is probably worth a flyer in this environment. I'm disappointed that it hasn't moved higher. But you know what? It's interesting. We talked about Danaher earlier. because now you have some Danaher DNA in GE. I think that's really important. By the way, Danaher was named after a creek in Montana that the Rails brothers were fishing on. We talked about that a decade or so ago on CNBC's Fast Money. That, by the way, is The More You Know. You can fire that graphic if you want as well, if you have it handy.
It was Fast Money
Tim,
classic.
It's not a dime, okay? It's not a dime.
We got to move on. We've got an earnings alert on FedEx. I just dimed you, by the way. Earnings alert on FedEx. The stock's soaring in the after-hour session. Let's get to Frank Holland, who's got all the details. Hey, Frank.
Hey there, Melissa. Beat on revenue, a more than dollar beat on EPS. FedEx ground margin also surprising to the upside for the segment that's been handling much of that increased demand due to COVID-19. FedEx ground seeing volumes increase by 23%. But much of that was that less profitable B2C. Operating margin falling year over year because of that B2C increase. Average revenue per piece falling as well. But Amit Marotta from Deutsche Bank echoing the sentiments of many others on the street. Shock and awe in a good way. People were bracing for something like 6 or 7% margin for ground. The express margins more than doubled sequentially. The CapEx number is also very, very positive. Because one of the knocks on this company is that they've been overspending on CapEx. FedEx says CapEx will be around $4.9 billion in fiscal 2021, a $1 billion decline. The company is saying every single line item was impacted by COVID-19. That includes a $125 million increase in operating cost, much of that to buy PPE for employees. FedEx also declining to offer full-year guidance because of the uncertainty of the pandemic. And after hours, UPS also up 5%, both companies seeing a boost in volume. UPS also a first mover on a surcharge for large retail customers, a move expected to generate $50 million for UPS in June alone. FedEx just starting that surcharge on June 8th. We'll have to watch and see how that turns out.
All
back
right.
Over to you.
Frank, thank you. Frank Holland with the latest on FedEx. Steve Grosso, better than expected quarter, bigger than expected move, as predicted by the options market here, by the way, in the after hours.
Yeah, when I look at it on a chart right now, it hasn't been above or hasn't maintained above the 200-day moving average for any length of time since the middle of 2018. 200-day moving average is, let's call it 141. Last sale is 152.65. I would probably sell this move thinking that it's going to come back within range, back to that 200-day moving average or thereabouts. I'd be a seller of this pop.
I mean, one theory is put forth by Citigroup when they raised their price target a week or so ago to 160 a share is that with all the reopenings, B2B business will be picking up, and that's sort of a higher margin business here. So there's really upside once you get sort of past the roughest part of the year. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, so, you know, this is one that, as of today's close, was down 50% from its January 2018 highs. You know, there's a whole host of issues that were specific to this company. Their earnings were down about 45% from the peak in 2018. So earnings revision after earnings revision after earnings revision have pounded this thing down. It hasn't taken a whole heck of a lot to get this stock higher. If they do have an inflection on the margins, on that ground margins, that's what I think investors really want to see. It's a cheap stock, and then you put together the optimism about a global recovery, and you don't get to buy too many brands like this down 50% or so. But I kind of agree with Steve, you know, up, you know, 12, 13 bucks, up, you know, 10% or so on one clip without full year guidance. You probably get a shot for this thing to settle back in a little bit.
All right. Coming up, the race for coronavirus vaccine is on, but the FDA has raised new concerns that could slow things down. We've got the details and much more ahead. Plus, we're going a little stir crazy without sports, right? But our Dan Nathan has a stock that he thinks will race higher when big events come back. That name and much more with Fast Money Return.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We're getting new details from the FDA on what conditions need to be met for approval of a coronavirus vaccine. Let's get to Meg Terrell for the breakdown. Hey, Meg.
Hey, Mel. Well, we are just a couple weeks away, if you can believe it, from the first large-scale phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trials beginning. And today, the FDA putting out this guidance, giving us some idea of what to expect for how well these vaccines need to work and what exactly they need to show before they could get approved. The FDA says these vaccines have to be at least 50% effective at preventing either infection from the virus or disease, and that they also have to test not just one of those things, but also evaluate whether they prevent severe disease and the infection as well. They say they won't accept surrogate endpoints, meaning you can't just show antibody generation data because they say it hasn't been proven yet what levels you need to confer protection. Of course, safety is the most important thing, and they say subjects must be followed for up to 1 to 2 years at least, even if the vaccines are approved, just to follow along those safeties and to get a sense of the durability of the protection. Now, Moderna, of course, is one of the front runners here, and they have already laid out some of their phase 3 plans, and they jive, of course, with this guidance. They say their trial will enroll 30,000 participants in the United States. Their primary goal is prevention of symptomatic disease, but the secondary goals are prevention of more severe disease, meaning hospitalization, and also preventing the virus from being able to infect cells at all. Now, they are in the lead, but Pfizer is neck and neck with them, planning to start a trial in July as well. AstraZeneca planning either July or August for a trial start in the U.S., J&J then in September, and Sanofi and GlaxoSmithKline toward the end of the year. And Melissa, Pfizer tells us, I interviewed their CEO on Friday, they already have their phase 1 trial data in-house, and they are just waiting for a scientific journal to publish it, for it to be released. They say they expect they could have data by September from the phase 3 if enrollment goes quickly. Mel?
So, Meg, just so I get this straight, let's say the study were 30,000 patients. 50% would have to not show symptomatic COVID, and the other 50%, I mean, I don't really understand the 50% effective. It doesn't sound very reassuring.
Yeah, so if you think about flu vaccines, typically they're maybe 40 to 60% in a good year effective at preventing either severe disease or disease with the flu. So basically what they need to show is when they divide, you know, those 30,000 patients, half will be in placebo, half will get the vaccine, that in the group that gets the vaccine, you do see disease reduced by 50%.
Okay. Meg, thanks. Meg Terrell with the latest on the FDA guidelines. I mean, I think the key here as it pertains to the markets and to the economy is, will a vaccine of that efficacy change your behavior? Will it enable you to go out with any sort of confidence to stores, to hotels, go on planes, et cetera? Tim, what do you think?
Absolutely. And from a market's perspective, well, let me take a step back. I acknowledge that people at times in the last 2 months have shown some sense of either confidence, irresponsibility, whatever you want to say, whether it was storming into casinos, whether it was discussions about, you know, whether they actually would take a vaccine or not if it had been developed. And they think that there's maybe greater risks in that. But the bottom line here is, if you look at the market and what you want to own the day that you know for sure that those numbers are enough to get FDA approval and there is efficacy, is you want to own banks, you want to own Guy's Windicator, you want to own airlines, you want to own most of the industrial stuff, auto companies, anyone who's got this ticking time bomb in terms of their balance sheet, that's what this is all about. So it's all about understanding the length to normalcy. I know that as analysts and investors, we can look to 2022, but these companies cannot. So I do think that it's very important that the vaccine comes, and I do think people will feel more confident.
Guy?
I admire Pfizer because effectively what they're saying is we're not going to say anything until we know more, as opposed to some of these other companies that just seem to rattle stuff off for a number of various reasons, which proper decorum prohibits me from getting into. With that said, Tim brings up a great point. You know, what a lot of people don't talk about is, and if you just look at these numbers, there's 40% of the population that have basically flat out said they're not going to get the vaccine, even if it's proven effective. That's problematic because this entire thing seems to be politicized. I don't know what that means health-wise, but I can't believe it's particularly good. But to Steve's earlier point, we're closer to getting a vaccine because people are out there looking for it. I mean, that's why. But again, these things take time, and the typical duration is at best 18 months. And what are we, 6 months in? So there's still a lot of road to hoe here. With that said, and we've said this for a long time, the way to play this is with the IBB, which Steve mentioned earlier, as did Carter Braxton Worth. Above 134, that is a verified breakout, in my opinion.
All right. Our next guest says, despite virus flare-ups that we're seeing across the country, stocks are still headed back to all-time highs this year. Marco Kalanovich is a global head of macro, quantitative, and derivative strategy at J.P. Morgan. He joins us on the Fast Line. Marco, always great to speak with you.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
So you think that the flare-ups are just hiccups, and you're really pointing to the lower mortality rate, so you're not dying, and so that makes you more confident?
You know, we have a number of things happening in the market. You know, one is first the stimulus, you know. The second is really whether the COVID is going to end the economy, and we don't think it's going to end the economy. We think we are seeing now a bit of a second wave, but mortality in the second wave should be much lower. We're also monitoring some of the smart thermometer data and basically seeing much smaller spike than what we saw sort of in March and April. So we think it's a little bit of a step back, but we are on a path to recovery. Economy is on a path to recovery.
So your year-end target is 3,400. And what sort of progress do we need to make on that vaccine? Is that one of your primary, you know, base cases for 3,400, mm-hmm. that we have progress towards a vaccine and then maybe unemployment?
Okay. No, not at all. We really don't condition it at all on a vaccine. Basically, on one side, we are looking at the impact of monetary and fiscal measures. And on the other side, we are basically looking at some limited reopening economy that does not require a vaccine.
So it sounds like there could be upside potential to your 3,400 target. I mean, should we make some pretty decent progress to the vaccine? If that's not factored in whatsoever, that could be a real booster.
I agree. So if there is a progress on vaccine, which we do not factor in, I think you would just see the quicker snapback. You know, you would just get there quicker, much quicker, you know, and you probably overshoot, you know, so we're talking here about 3,400. I think if you can accelerate everything, I think you would probably go to about 3,400, call it 3,600, 3,700. You know, one big driver of our view is also positioning. You know, positioning in equities is actually very low. So it's about 25th percentile across discretionary hedge funds. If you look at the quants, it's actually even much lower. You know, so for instance, all of these vol targeters, risk parity, even CTAs to some extent, they're between 5 and 10 percentile. And you know, like, so just the decline in volatility, if you can just normalize a little bit markets, actually money will flow into equities. You know, like, so that's another big driver, which is entirely independent of COVID.
Hey, Marco, it's Tim. Congrats. You guys have done a great job on having a level head in the chaos and talking about positioning and then talking about this unprecedented level of stimulus. And so back to then, let's talk positioning. You just hit a lot of it. But at times you've given us some specific levels if CTAs overshoot on a couple headlines that we could get. Can you give us some near-term guideposts on where you think some of the shorter-term overshoots could be?
Yeah, so look. With the CTAs now, and that's something that's not very well understood, I think, in the market, you know, signals are largely positive. You know, we are above 200 moving their average. We're above some of the other fixed tenor signals. So signals are positive, but what's holding back these investors is high levels of, call it VIX, you know, high levels of realized volatility. So signals are already positive, but because volatility is high, these funds are only maybe like 15 to 20% invested on the trend side. You know, so basically declining VIX would just basically, you would just see an increase in assets going into equities, funds going into equities. You know, so I wouldn't tie to specific price level, but more declining VIX. So let's say VIX can go into mid-20s, you know, and maybe by the end of the summer, sort of low 20s, then I think you would just pour in, you know, probably a few hundred billion dollars in equities, which in an environment of low liquidity could push market quite substantially above these levels.
All right. And Marco, while we have you, just a quick question. You know, we've been talking about the rise of the retail trader, and I'm just wondering if in your sort of world, if that factors in at all, their liquidity that they're adding into this market.
It does factor a little bit, you know. So I would say the assets, you know, assets are not huge, but their impact can be larger. You know, like the market impact of these trades could be is probably larger than institutional trades, and assets are flowing in. You know, people are getting these paychecks, they're staying at home, they're doing it as a pastime instead of betting. So actually definitely helped, and we think that money will stay in the market, you know, like, so that's another thing which I think is a positive.
All right, Marco, thank you.
No problem.
Marco Kalanovich, JP Morgan. Dan, Marco said the magic number on volatility, VIX, is mid-20s, low-20s this summer.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, obviously, it's really about monetary stimulus. I think that's the thing that sticks around. I think fiscal is going to be harder to come by. I just remember last time he was on the air or on our show with us, he was a little worried about the tensions with China. To my purview, they're not getting better, and they're only likely to get worse. And especially as the president's numbers are as bad as they are, he needs to beat up on something. So I suspect that situation is not going to be particularly good, and that could be a real headwind to growth or global growth at a time when, we just need it to kind of putter along and we need to kind of unify. So to me, that would be the big headwind that I see.
Grasso, quick comment.
I think he's right. I think you're going to overshoot those old highs. I think you're going to shoot straight to 3,500 from here. Between monetary, fiscal, and reopening the economy, those three things are going to have the ability to be a tailwind for the overall market. I think the easiest path is still higher.
All right, coming up, Apple in rally mode, but our shares about to turn sour. We'll break down the latest 5G iPhone worries. Stick around. Much more fast still ahead.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast. It's a big night full of food here on CNBC. Coming up top of the hour, Kramer sitting down with the CEO of Conagra Foods. Be sure to catch Mad 6 p.m. Eastern. Then later, our new documentary, Supermarket Shock, Crisis in America's Food Supply, that premieres tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern time, right here on CNBC. Meantime, ahead on Fast, shopping for a deal, why options traders are betting on Macy's ahead of earnings. We'll bring you the trade. But first, Dan is winding up for a fast pitch. He's got a reopening trade that he thinks will knock it out of the park. He's taking the mound when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money as we close the books on the first half of the year. Dan Nathan says there is one stock that is sure to be a high flyer for your portfolio. He's taking it now with its fast pitch. Dan.
Well, you know, Mel, on Fast Money, I like to say there's always a good bear market somewhere. Well, here's one in Twitter right here. This stock is down 20% in just the last few weeks. It's down 8% on the year. You know, since they reported their Q1 back in late April, the stock has really been a bit of a mess. Their March revenues were down year over year, or their ad revenue 27%, but they did have a nice uptick in monthly active users. They have this funny DAU, MAU sort of situation, but I think investors like that. So on a relative basis to Snap, which has had this massive run, it's rallied 40 or 50% just in the last couple of months. It's trading at about 12 times sales versus Twitter at about 6 times sales. I say to myself, there's kind of some catalysts here that could be setting up as we get into the summer with this stock really not participating in this broad rally here. And what am I thinking about? I'm thinking about sports, man. NBA is coming back, Major League Baseball, abbreviated season. Hopefully the NFL is coming back. And so when I think about those sorts of catalysts, I say to myself, okay, Twitter has about an ARPU, average revenue per user, about $20 versus Facebook at a $30. They just gained a bunch of users in that Q1 despite ad revenue being being down, I'm thinking that those new catalysts with sports coming back help them improve their margins, help them get greater revenues from the users that they do have. And then I guess the last point I'll just say is the sentiment is horrible. Wall Street analysts hate this stock. There's only 7 buy ratings, 29 holds, and 5 sells on this thing. So, you know, no one likes it. It doesn't trade well. I say Jack Dorsey, the CEO of the company, is really kind of stepping up here, and it's going to come out a better platform at the end of it. Last thing, the charts are maybe so bad that they're good. At $30, if you can break out here, it gets back to 35 here. We have 2 charts, 18 month and a 5 year. Look at them. It's in a bad downtrend. If it breaks that soon, I think you see mid 30s.
All right. Time for questions. Grasso, you've got one.
Yeah. So Dan, when you look at this, though, and you set it up for me perfectly, the downtrend, when I go back to September of 2019, then you see the February of 2020 and then the June of 20, you have lower highs, series of lower highs. And that for a technician means it's running out of gas. So while I do agree with you, I think it's been oversold and I think you can get a pop. Is this a short-term pop that you're looking for, and then you're going to exit the trade again?
Yeah, I mean, Steve, the charts are horrible, no doubt about it. I just think that the March guidance, or they didn't give any guidance. I think the expectations got so low that if they are able to beat and then guide up for the back half of the year, you'll clearly see a near-term pop. And if there's any inflection on some of those metrics we talked about, I think you have a stock that's kind of put its bottom in the mid-20s or so.
All right, no more time for questions. It's time to vote, I should say. Are you buying Dan's pitch on Twitter? Guy Adami, what do you say?
Well, you know, I can't see anybody, but I hope you can see this, Mel. And if you can, it's me tweeting about the tweet, buyer, hashtag heart Dan, despite the fact, to Steve's point, it continues to make lower lows and lower highs. I like Twitter.
All right. Tim?
I'm just going to draw it for you, barely. There's my little tweet here. I'm a buyer, and as much as I get nervous when Dan gets bullish, I'm long the stock. They've always had issues monetizing. I do think DAU growth is very important here.
Steve Grasso.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a buy as well, and I'm going to say buy Twitter, and I would sell it. I'd be a short-term holder of this. I would sell it at 35. I think that's good resistance.
All right. Well, the panel has spoken. Are you at home, though, buying Dan's pitch on Twitter? Vote now in our Twitter poll, at CNBC Fast Money. We will show you the results later on in the show. But up next, Apple's plans for 5G domination might have hit a snag. We have the details when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Take a look at Apple, the stock rallying today, but a troubling report suggests that the tech giant's 5G plans could hit a snag. Let's get to Josh Lipton for the details. Hey, Josh.
So, Melissa, the first question is how much confidence we should have in this report. I checked in with a couple tech analysts who know Apple backwards and forwards. They say not very much. They're not very confident in the source. But here's what DigiTimes reports, that Apple suppliers now expect 2020 5G iPhone shipments of 15 to 20 million. That's versus prior expectations of 30 to 40 million. Caught up with Gene Munster of Loop Ventures. He still thinks Tim Cook does take the stage, announces new 5G-enabled iPhones, that those new devices, he says, will hit the shelves in time for that critical holiday season. But there's a caveat, too. Munster thinks that initial demand for those phones could be softer than many investors are now expecting. One, he says, economic uncertainty, but just as importantly, 5G coverage in the U.S., Munster's arguing, will still be spotty at that point. Bottom line, he doesn't believe we see strong consumer adoption of 5G phones until late 2021, but between now and then, he still thinks Apple stock moves higher from here. I asked him why. He says, listen, Apple is a stable business with lots of cash, and he still thinks Apple can continue benefiting from some of those broader work-from-home trends as well. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Josh, thanks. Josh Lipton. Guy Dami, what do you think? I mean, I know that you're rushing out to buy the 5G phone as soon as it gets released.
Oh, 100%. I'm actually visiting the application store once it reopens. The first thing I'm going to do is going to buy the 5G device without question. I mean, why wouldn't I, right? I want to be like all the cool kids. Mentioned, by the way, the cool kids like Josh Lipton, who is at another level of cool. But that's, again, I digress, and that's another story. What is the stock? I mean, bad news doesn't matter. Impervious. I think it's in now 285 or so ETFs. So when money flow comes in, Apple goes higher. It's as simple as that. And I think it's going to continue until the end of the month. I do think, though, if you're on the sidelines, you will get a chance to buy this stock at the prior all-time high, which was 325. Apple does give you opportunities a few times a year.
Tim?
The valuation is really tough here. I agree with everything Guy's saying on the liquidity dynamics with Apple. Also, you know, there is some concern that this iPhone 12 is going to be pricier. And so I don't know how sensitive they are. Dan Nathan will be sleeping out to get his 96th Apple device, but I'm not sure that everybody will be. They're talking about pulling out the charger and doing some other things, and I just don't know. At some point, the price may be a challenge, but the biggest issue is the price of the stock, not the company. I think 5G is fine. We've priced in a lot of 5G, but it's really this multiple.
Yeah, I think we priced in a lot of 5G, but I think that the actual phone, when it comes out, the availability of it in the back half of this year, it's probably in the last few months of the year, it's just not going to be that great. There's not going to be a big super cycle. I think where the opportunities with 5G are kind of a way about connected devices and IoT, some things like that. So to me, it's going to be a higher price point. This is not the time for them to do that, in my opinion, and I just don't think it's going to have mass availability. So, you know, I don't think you buy it for 5G right here.
All right, coming up, Macy's reporting earnings tomorrow, and option traders are going on a shopping spree. We will explain. Plus, keep the votes coming. We will reveal if America is buying Dan's fast pitch on Twitter. The results are coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to Fast Money. Macy's reports earnings tomorrow, and check out what a wild month it's been. The company announced a $4.5 billion capital raise back on June 8th. It also pre-announced a 45% drop in Q1 sales while cutting nearly 4,000 jobs. The stock is up 8% this month, and option traders are betting on even bigger gains ahead. Mike's got the action. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Melissa. So we saw calls comfortably outpace puts today. That's not actually news just for today. We've actually seen that over the past 20 days, where call volume has outpaced put volume by more than 2-1. That has led the open interest in calls to comfortably exceed that of puts for the first time since October of 2019. Options right now are implying about a 9% move between now and the end of the week. And where we're seeing a lot of that activity is in the weekly 6.5 calls. The buyers of those were paying just under 40 cents. So those are bets that the stock is actually going to rise above that 6.5 strike price by at least the 40 cents or so that they paid. And of course, as you pointed out, they announced those preliminary results. We saw more than 30% swings that week. So this week, slightly less moves expected, but bullish bets are the ones that are being made in the options markets.
Grasso, Macy's.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can see about Macy's is that the stock is down 59%. So you think it's due for a bounce. So is Kohl's Stores. It's down 59%. So is JWN. It's down 62%. All those could be bouncing. I agree with it. Macy's is due for a bounce off the lows.
All right. Thanks, Mike, for that. Mike Coe with the Options Action. By the way, we're off this week for Independence Day. But for more Options Action, be sure to tune into the full show the following Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Up next, we will reveal if you bought Dan's fast pitch on Twitter, the results when Fast Money returns. Time for the results of Dan's fast pitch on Twitter. And Dan, you squeaked by with a win. Squeaked by 51%. So you're having the time of your life. Time now for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Tim?
I'm going to ride that FedEx momentum. Remember, the stock underperformed the S&P by 60% from Jan 18 lows. I think your time to cyclically buy this stock and the whole sector.
Steve Grasso.
On semiconductor, ON is the ticker symbol. I'm looking for 10% in a matter of a week or week and a half on semiconductor, ON.
Dan.
Yeah, just on Twitter, $19 billion enterprise value, way too cheap here for that asset.
Guy, we hardly ever hear this song, right? I mean, really.
Can't wait to see you tomorrow night's show, Mel. It's going to be a big one.
I'm off.
Oh. Pan American Silver, PAAS.
Thanks for watching Fast. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5, or they will. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.